Working Cows Podcast, Episode 18.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
This episode has been brought to you in part by Kamak Ranch Supply. Check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. This episode is also brought to you by chriswilliamsaudio.com. Head on over to chriswilliamsaudio.com for all your audio production needs. Welcome to the show, everybody. My guest today on the Working Cows podcast is Nancy Lobby. Nancy is a senior program officer with the Sustainable Ranching Initiative, a division of the World Wildlife Fund. At World Wildlife Fund, Nancy leads direct engagement with the ranching community in North America with a special focus on the Northern Great Plains region, where sustainable beef production goes hand in hand with conserving the iconic grassland ecosystem on which it relies. Nancy, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on. Really excited about an opportunity to sit down with you. I'd like to give you an opportunity to just share a little bit about what you do and how it is you came to be doing that.
Yes, and thank you so much for having me. It's great to be able to talk a little bit about the work that World Wildlife Fund is doing in the Northern Great Plains. We started our Sustainable Ranching Initiative about 5 years ago, maybe almost six. This came about kind of from a change in philosophy almost from what typical conservation organizations do to a little bit more on the ground sort of work. And so typically, conservation organizations have done on the ground projects, but not typically with private landowners. It's usually with other conservation organizations and that sort of thing. So what we did about 5 years ago is looked at the Northern Great Plains and identified who was on the ground, who lived there, who owned what land, and what came out of that was over 76% of the Northern Great Plains is owned by ranchers.
Wow.
Private landowners, the majority of that is ranchers. And then there is a big chunk of public land that is also in the Northern Great Plains, and the majority of that, obviously, as you know, is managed by ranchers as well because they use that for leasing.
Sure.
So in an attempt to really scale up how we were going to protect the grasslands in the Northern Great Plains, we started the Sustainable Ranching Initiative in order to work with private landowners. And the theory behind that is we have grass in common. What we're trying to protect is the last remaining intact grassland here in North America. And ranchers obviously need grass to feed their cattle. That grassland needs to be grazed, and so cattle provide that function that bison and other large ungulates have provided in the past. So it's a really, it's a win-win for both of us, and it really was a matter of just kind of getting on the ground and starting with building some relationships with ranchers. And that's where I come in. I actually grew up on a ranch, and I come from the beef industry, and so when I started 5 years ago, it was a matter of just getting out on the ground and talking to ranchers about just exactly that, what we have in common, and trying to identify the common ground and work on that, and the things that we don't agree on, agree to disagree, and move forward. In doing that, what we found was we didn't disagree on a whole lot. We had a lot in common, and it's amazing how much commonality you can see when you sit down together and listen to one another and really dive into, you know, what are those common threads. So we've been doing that for about 5 years, and we've expanded from one person to four people now working on the Sustainable Ranching Initiative. So we're really excited about that.
Very cool history there. I appreciate that. maybe just to make sure that we're all on the same page, let's define sustainable ranching.
So sustainable ranching, as defined by World Wildlife Fund, I guess, there isn't any kind of, you know, official definition. The way we look at it is that in order for ranchers to be sustainable and to be, you know, a viable group on the landscape, they need to be economically viable. They need to consider the environment in their decisions and also consider the social aspects of it. So one of the things that we think about when we work with a group of ranchers is not just the individual ranchers, but the ranching community. So those ranchers depend on so much in their community. As you know, like in the Northern Great Plains, it's a long way to a major city. I mean, these are vast landscapes, which is exactly what we wanted to protect and to keep intact. You know, these ranchers have, maybe they have to drive 50 miles to town, or they have to, you know, they have kids that are in the schools, and they have, you know, different communities around there that they depend on for labor or whatever. So not just thinking about the individual ranchers, but thinking about those communities is really important too. So we look at it from that kind of three-legged stool: the economic piece, the environment piece, and then the social piece.
It's interesting how often that comes up as kind of the way that people look at it, or the matrix through which we see this industry, you know, whether it's ranching for profit that talks about the economics, the people, the cows, and the forage management, or holistic management that talks about the economics, the people, and the forage, and then the cows come in under the forage and the economics. You know, it's these kind of holistic ways of looking at it, I think, are an important part of what it takes to be sustainable. And if you neglect any one of those, you know, and with a sustainable ranching initiative, if you neglect the education of the consuming public, I guess is how I'll say it, there's going to probably be some threats that come about as a result of that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that we have looked at here in the Northern Great Plains, there aren't a lot of people that understand the grassland. From a conservation community, when you say the Amazon, you immediately think deforestation, and that is immediately what comes to mind. But when you talk about the grassland and, you know, the threats to the grassland, people don't, and the general consuming public just doesn't understand generally, you know, why it's important. We get asked that question a lot, you know, what is the deal with the grasslands? You know, they're out there. So what? Why are we worried about them? And so there is an education piece that comes with this. And I think when we first started working with ranchers and trying to identify how we were going to work in this space, we actually held some listening sessions with groups of ranchers in three different regions. And what we found from those listening sessions, and the listening sessions were basically just, hey, what keeps you up at night? You know, what are the things that really are going to, you know, affect your operation long term? And there were several things that came out of that. One of them was regulation, you know, and the whole tax piece. There was a big concern about intergenerational transfer and transferring the ranch to the next generation. Hmm. And then the other one was really around the consumer piece. You know, we need somebody that's credible that can talk about the good things that we're doing, because ranching and beef in general has gotten kind of a bad rap because of, you know, things like the Amazon and other threats. So I think that we recognize that, and not only do we work with ranchers, but we also have an entire team that works on food issues. And so obviously cattle turn into beef, and we work with a variety of large companies that are large buyers of beef. And some of the things that we talk about are, you know, we have these ranchers in Northern Great Plains, and they are doing good things, and that beef is getting into your supply chain. And we need to be able to talk about, you know, the benefits that are provided by these large ungulates on this landscape. We've actually been very successful in bringing some of those corporate entities actually out to the Northern Great Plains and onto some ranches, and it's made a huge difference. That, you know, these people that work for these corporations that are buying this beef, or that are you know, really making the decisions on a day-to-day basis of how they source their products. Some of these guys have never been on a ranch. And so bringing them out to the Northern Great Plains and bringing, you know, having that education piece, sitting them down with ranchers, a lot of times we get them out on the ground and we take them fencing and we, you know, move cattle or vaccinate cattle or whatever the case may be. It's really a day in the life of a rancher. And that makes a huge difference in not only how they source, but also it gives them a platform to be able to talk about the beef to the consumers that either shop at their stores or eat at their restaurants.
Yeah, very, very interesting, very helpful things. And I for one, just appreciate the work that you guys are doing. Was there any hesitation on the part of the ranchers during those listening sessions? I mean, did they, were they suspicious of people coming in and offering these kinds of opportunities?
I would say that the ranchers were very suspicious. The whole process of trust building cannot go unnoticed. I mean, that was the primary thing that we did probably within the first 2 years. I mean, we didn't do anything but just visit with ranchers and attend meetings, and it was really all about trust building. There was a huge trust problem, as you can imagine. I mean, it's just, it's almost like, you know, we're from the government and we're here to help, you know, it's like, but it's, we're from WWF and we're here to help, and people are, they look at us cross-eyed a little bit. But I think over the past 5 to 6 years, we've really put our money where our mouth is in a lot of cases. And I think that when we say we're going to do something, we do it. And that's made a big impact. And I think we've built some relationships with some pretty influential ranchers who then, you know, almost speak for us and can almost, you know, vouch for us to other folks. Now, we're always going to have ranchers that don't, you know, there's going to be the folks that just don't want to have anything to do with us. And I get that. And it's fine. We don't have to work with everybody. But we would like to identify areas where we can work together with those ranchers that are willing to take a shot at working with us. One of the cool things I think that we're doing in the Northern Great Plains this year is we've taken all of those relationships that we have built with individual ranchers and ranching organizations, as well as the corporate community, the large buyers of beef, and we're actually going to do a pilot in the Northern Great Plains using those ranchers to actually show how a sustainable beef supply chain, what it might look like, utilizing the indicators and metrics developed by a multi-stakeholder initiative that we're highly involved in called the U.S. Roundtable for Sustainable Beef. And it's about putting those indicators and metrics on the ground, testing them out with ranchers that are actually going to be doing the work with processors, with retailers, with everybody in the chain. And there's some real excitement starting in Montana. There's some real excitement around what that might look like and the ability to be part of the process. So yeah. While we think, you know, we think that it's really cool, you know, I mean, we're always going to be building trust. I mean, that's going to be an ongoing thing. It's going to be something that we will always have to do. So it's not something that we're, you know, we've stopped doing. It's just a matter of, it's still a focus, and we just have to continue to do it.
Yeah. I've been saying since I was exposed to the Sustainable Ranching Initiative and was part of a workshop that was funded by, the World Wildlife Fund that, you know, I saw the Save the Whales advertisement at the end of Free Willy, and it didn't scream to me, friend of ranching, you know, and I don't know if that was World Wildlife Fund or not, but, you know, but it is just a different mindset, and it's such, so cool, you know, this round table, for sustainable beef that you mentioned is just such a cool thing. And I'm really excited to see what comes out of that, because I think there's so much more going on our grasslands than maybe even we as producers were aware of. And just that education piece of the public and education of producers about what are some of these indicator species and what are some of these, you know, of both wildlife and grasses that can kind of indicate to you that you're doing some good things on the land. And so I really appreciate the partnership of the World Wildlife Fund and the Sustainable Ranching Initiative and the things that they have been doing to make ranching more sustainable in all of the facets that the sustainability is a key issue.
Yeah, and I do think the other thing that is really important is, you know, even within the conservation community, beef has an impact, but so does all of us living on this planet. Like, we all have an impact on the planet. It isn't that one thing has no impact and these guys have all the impact. And so I think it's really important to recognize, and I think we do this through the sustainability, through the Sustainable Ranching Initiative, and also through the U.S. Roundtable for Sustainable Beef. It's about recognizing that there are impacts from beef production, and let's figure out a way to mitigate those impacts together. But there's also really positive things there. So how is it that we can do more of the positive, do less of, you know, figure out a way to mitigate the negative as much as we can, and then work together to do it. It shouldn't just be the ranchers that are doing this. You know, the retail sector has a place at the table. The packers have a place, and I think what we've said all along is that, you know, let's not try to create another niche market or you know, just pick on the rancher at some point. At some point, we're all at the table together, and I think that working together has been just a really neat experience personally and professionally, to be able to have all of us sit down at the table and go, okay, we can't do anything about cow belches, but what can we do? You know, what are some of the things we can do, and really figuring out and diving into what those things are. So it's been a great experience.
Yeah. I mean, it's simple economics. The supply will come up to meet the demand, right? And so far there isn't a demand to the point that a lot of ranchers have had to change the way they do things. And, you know, as far as vaccinations and some of those things. And so, you know, we will change to meet that demand when the demand changes. But most people aren't aware or aren't educated to the point that their demand has changed. And so the supply continues the same. But some of these initiatives, I think, are an important piece in educating both the supplier and the demander so that those things become more sustainable. And it's just cool. It's cool cool time to be involved in ranching, I think, with people like that.
Yep, for sure.
So we're going to take a quick break and thank our sponsors. And we've kind of danced around the issue of the importance of grassland. So I'd like to come back after the break and talk a little bit more about the importance of grasslands and how we can positively impact these grasslands. This episode has been brought to you by Chris Williams Audio. Check out his website at chriswilliamsaudio.com. For the last 11 years or so, I've been talking for a living. I've gained some skills in talking. I can form a sentence. I can think on my feet. I can respond to questions. I can come up with new questions. All that time developing my speaking craft has not left me a lot of time to figure out how to make audio sound great. If you're a musician, podcaster, or filmmaker, making your product sound great is crucial. So you stick to what you know, and let Chris Williams stick to what he knows, making your product sound great. Head on over to chriswilliamsaudio.com for all your podcasting, music production, and film audio needs. We are back with Nancy Lobby from the Sustainable Ranching Initiative, and we are talking about the work that the Sustainable Ranching Initiative does. And we've mentioned a few times the importance of grasslands, specifically the Northern Great Plains. And you mentioned in passing at one point that the Northern Great Plains is one of, if not the last functioning grassland in North America. So what is the Northern Great Plains specifically, I guess, would be my first question.
So the Northern Great Plains, as defined by, this is a definition as defined by WWF, is an area in North America that encompasses basically eastern Montana, eastern Wyoming, the Sand Hills of Nebraska, western South Dakota, western North Dakota, and part of the provinces of Saskatchewan and Alberta. So there is a map that shows what that is. And this grassland is 183 million acres, and it is one of four remaining intact grasslands in the world. The only one that's intact, completely temperate grasslands in North America. Now, there's other grasslands, obviously, you have in the Flint Hills of Kansas and other places, but as a temperate, intact grassland, it's one of four remaining in the world. And it's a super important place because, you know, as I mentioned about the Amazon earlier, everybody knows what, you know, the Amazon does and the importance of the Great Barrier Reef and all these different places. But this place is just as important. It is the home of thousands of plant species, of thousands of mammals and reptiles, and grassland birds call this place home for part of their life. It's a pretty big area that is used for breeding birds. Not only that, but this area is important because it sequesters carbon. Most people don't think of grasslands as a carbon sequesterer, but I've heard that it sequesters as much carbon as the Amazon rainforest. It also filters our water. It cleans the air. It provides, obviously, homes to all these animals that care about it, but also the people that are on the land that are actually out there taking care of it. So I think that we've actually, we aren't the only ones that are concerned about this grassland. There's other groups that work in this area as well, but it is one that we, is a priority place for the World Wildlife Fund globally. And we have an on-the-ground office in Bozeman, Montana that is right there in the heart of the grasslands. So.
Yeah, very interesting. So what are some of the threats to these grasslands?
The biggest threat to the grassland is conversion to crop agriculture, as well as oil and gas development. So we actually have published a report 2 years in a row now, and we'll do this every year, where we call it the plow print. And it looks at how the cultivated crops are moving to the west. Now, typically what you would think of as crop ground versus, you know, ranching ground, it really people always focus on the 100th meridian, you know, on the east side of the 100th meridian, you had all of the crops because that was typically the best soil for growing crops. And then everything west of the 100th meridian was ranch land because it's usually less rainfall, the soil wasn't as good. So you typically did not see crops moving past the 100th meridian. However, with the advances in technology, we're now seeing places where you can actually grow corn in certain areas because of the technology, whether it's through, you know, direct irrigation technology or the types of seeds and those sorts of things. And so all of those things, while great, have actually had an impact on the grasslands because it's allowed conversion of those grasslands to crop agriculture. Now, we need crop agriculture, so I just want to be clear that we are not against farming or crop agriculture. That is a really important part of our food supply. But what we need to do is figure out a way to do this, you know, produce more food on the ground that's already cultivated rather than try to convert new ground. And that's one of the things that we're trying to focus on through whether it's education or, you know, information sharing between farmers and ranchers, or also, you know, just the fact that maybe we could figure out a way to level the playing field with ranchers and so that it's just as profitable to ranch as it is to farm. So those are some things that we think about.
Yeah, very timely. I was just in a meeting yesterday where they were mentioning the march of corn. They were saying corn is marching west. And, yeah, that is definitely something that you see. And with the rises and falls in commodity prices, you will see more or less ground turned into row crop agriculture. But typically when they go to row crop agriculture, you're not going to see them come back to grass. Now, we have recently released an episode with the Mahalskis, who were featured producers in the South Dakota Grassland Coalition Grassland Planner, and they have taken some of that marginal ground that they had been using as row crop agriculture and seeded it back to grass, and they talked about the benefits of that. And so that's a very cool thing that we see happening, is that people are saying, what I can do on this with a cow is more beneficial for my land and at least as beneficial for my pocketbook. So I'm going to do that because I know it's one motivation at least is that it's the right thing to do for the land and for the cows and for ultimately, I believe, for the end consumer as well. So some pretty cool things. One of the resources that goes along with that is the Plowprint resource that is an annual publication. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is published annually, and actually some of those things you talk about, we actually recognize in that Plowprint where we've seen, you know, where a lot of that ground that maybe once was converted to corn is now going back to some sort of a perennial cover, which, you know, once it's plowed, it releases all sorts of carbon into the atmosphere. So it's from a greenhouse gas perspective, it's bad to plow it in the first place. But then it's really hard, as you know, to get that back to what it was. I mean, after hundreds of years of that root supply and that really good quality grassland, it's really hard to get that back to what it was. But I do think any kind of effort to, whether it's through, you know, planting back to a perennial cover or even on some, as you know, in South Dakota, they've taken, you know, the crop ground and planted in cover crops in some places and then brought cattle back to graze that cover crop. And I think that reintroduction of cattle even back into farm ground is something that is really interesting and we're really excited about.
What are some of the benefits of reintroducing the cattle back into that farm ground that you are excited about?
Well, I think in specific cases, like we've seen it in certain areas where they've planted a cover crop, which obviously is great for the soil and it is improving the soil organic matter in the soil. But then you bring in cattle that do, you know, they tromp that material back into the ground and then they urinate on it and they defecate on it. And that's all, you know, fertilizer that stays right there on the ground. And it's not something that, so then, you know, through that, what we've seen from some folks that have done this is that it actually not only improves the soil organic carbon and soil organic matter in the crop ground, but they've actually seen increased yield. They've had to use less fertilizer. So it's been a win-win not only for ranchers who want to graze that, but also for the farmers when they raise their crops.
Sure. Yeah, and I have had multiple examples on the podcast in the past of producers talking about the benefits of getting that the urine and the manure back out onto the field, and some of them talking about the specific benefits of keeping that ruminant animal on the field so that they can place the urine and the manure there themselves, rather, because you don't lose, like specifically with urine, you lose the nitrogen component if it's not placed directly on the ground itself immediately. You know, that a lot of that nitrogen volatilizes unless it's protected in a way that it isn't usually protected in a feedlot. And so with these cover crops and grazing cover crops, we see a lot of people, like you're talking about, realizing those better yields, and that's a really cool thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Can you give me some specific examples of, you mentioned leveling the playing field so that it's as profitable to ranch as it is to grow corn or row crops in general. Can you give me some specific examples of that?
Yeah, that's a tough one that we really are grappling with. And we do work on some farm bill policy. Obviously, we do that in collaboration with a lot of our ranching partners because we don't want there to be unintended consequences of some things that we work on as it relates to policy and in government and on the Hill. So we do a lot of that in conjunction with our ranching partners. But I think that there's a few other things that we are looking at too. As I mentioned, one of the things that is really important to ranchers is this idea of intergenerational transfer. And so we actually have tried to identify what role can WWF play in that. And so we hired a consultant last year to actually look into this issue, interviewed ranchers, interviewed, you know, service providers and kind of everybody in between and said, you know, there's workshops out there and ranchers go to the workshop, but how do we get them to take what they what they've learned in the workshop and actually take the next step and, you know, go through the planning process. And, you know, what are the barriers to that? Is it financial? Is it, you know, the soft issues like family dynamics or whatever? I mean, or all the, everything in between. And then what role can organizations like WWF, or can we find organizations out there that will help with that transition? So we're going to be piloting an idea in Nebraska this year, where we are looking to see if we can hire a, you know, whether there, if we hired a task manager that could potentially help the rancher take that next step in transition. So that's a really important issue that would actually could potentially eliminate some of the selling of that ground, because it's, you know, it's valued, the value of the land has increased such that if you don't own it already or you don't inherit it, it's really hard to start in the ranching business. And then I think the other thing that we're looking at, and we've kind of dabbled in a little bit, is are there alternative markets, like this idea of a carbon market, and can the, is there opportunity to have some benefit to the carbon that is stored in grasslands? And we've identified some potential folks that are working on that in other areas, in forestry and that, in those other sorts of areas. But, you know, we're looking at it from, is there a way for us to put that to work on the grasslands? And so I think that's another way that we're doing that. And then it's just a matter of, you know, trying to identify how can we get the ranchers on the ground to be more, have more income or more abilities for the ability to succeed, I think is the big thing. So we're always open to ideas for what that might look like. So if anybody has ideas, I welcome them on how we might be able to help in that area.
Well, this episode has led to at least a couple of more episodes. I think in my mind, there's some questions that I know we don't have time to address today. So I do want to give you an opportunity to share where it is people can go to keep up with you. You know, you've mentioned a pilot of a program in Montana and a pilot of a program in Nebraska, both of which I think are crucial programs. That succession issue is a huge issue. And I think if we can keep those management styles in the same family, and we can see those management styles succeeded, as in the succession plan, that will aid in what you guys are trying to accomplish. So is there a place people can go to keep up with what the Sustainable Ranching Initiative is doing?
Yeah, so we have a website, www.worldwildlife.org/ranching. And I think that that will lead folks to our webpage, where you can have, get more information about what we're doing. And then I'm always available. If folks want to contact me by email, that is wonderful. And that is nancy.lavie, and my that's L-A, B as in boy, E, at wwfus.org. And I would be happy to talk with folks about stuff that we're doing.
Very cool. Well, I look forward to what comes of some of these different programs that you guys have piloted, and I would love to have you back on to talk some more in the future about, like I said, some of the things that I have rattling around in my head, and questions more about the influences that kind of led to what it is you guys are doing. But thank you for your time today, and links to all of the stuff that Nancy mentioned will be on workingcows.net/18. workingcows.net/18. We will have links to everything that Nancy mentioned today. So, Nancy, thank you for your time. This episode has been brought to you by Kamak Ranch Supply. Check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. Here's the deal about Kamak Ranch Supply. When you call and ask them about a product, there's no blank pause on the other end of the line because they don't understand the product that you just asked them about. If they are selling it, they understand it, because they are producers, and Gary Kamak himself, the owner of Kamak Ranch Supply, is a producer. So if you want answers about the products you're calling to ask about from producers, call Kamak Ranch Supply or check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. Well, it was a very interesting discussion with Nancy, and I appreciated her willingness to come on and sit down and talk about the different aspects of the World Wildlife Fund's partnership with the ranching community to increase the economic and ecologic sustainability of the land management practices that we are employing. And I just really enjoyed that opportunity to sit down with her. Next week is one of those can't-miss episodes. We are going to talk Canadian grass-fed beef with Tim Hoven, a producer from Canada. And so I invite you to tune in next week for Canadian grass-fed beef with Tim Hoven.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.